Thank you, Professor. You mentioned the need and the desire for the Commission to be informed about the relationship between your determination later in the year and the tax and welfare systems. You didn't mention the relationship between the work you do and the handover to the Industrial Relations Commission. Let me give you a specific example. In the building and construction sector, there is a complex web of remuneration arrangements built up from wages and all sorts of benefits and loadings. How is the mix going to work between your commission and the Industrial Relations Commission in the movement from what is a wage to all of those other loadings that effectively make up the remuneration package?
Thanks for that question. Sorry, your name was?
I beg your pardon. Doug Williams, National Chief Executive of the Civil Contractors Federation.
Thanks very much, Doug. Look, indeed, let me say two things about that. It's clear that the Fair Pay Commission must hand on the safety net decision which was made by the Industrial Relations Commission to those workers who have not yet received it. So there is a link there between the Industrial Relations Commission. The hangover of that determination, their final determination in this area, has to be implemented by the Fair Pay Commission. We can't find against that. More importantly, the point that Doug raises is the awards, as he rightly points out, are complicated combinations of conditions as well as wages. The Award Simplification Task Force, with its associated advisory committee, has been set up expressly to produce a set of, well, recommendations for the Fair Pay Commission to work with. So, Doug, it's not a very satisfying answer for you, but can I say that I am waiting, I think, with as much expectation as you are, for the output of that process. Mr. Matthew O'Callaghan, who is a member of the Industrial Relations Commission, chairs that task force, and that task force has been tasked, amongst other things, Doug, with answering your question, so that the Fair Pay Commission can focus on what it's been asked to focus on, namely the wages component of those awards. That's really all I want to say at this stage. Well, one further thing. It is clear that the terms and conditions of employment, the other elements of awards, are not part of the Fair Pay Commission's remit. The Fair Pay Commission is about setting and adjusting minimum wages. Full stop.
Thanks, Tim Lee, Head of Industrial Relations Victoria. Ian, in balancing the requirements, as you are required to do, between the interests of the unemployed and determining a fair minimum wage, it might well become the case that you'll be considering differential outcomes for different occupational groups. That is, that some occupational groups might be more sensitive in terms of the impact on the labour market to increases in the minimum wage. In that context, would you be contemplating different minimum wage outcomes for different occupational groups?
Well, Tim, thanks for that question. Again, it's clear that the Fair Pay Commission can set those wages subject to the overall minimum, not going below the Industrial Relations Commission's safety net. It can set and adjust those minimum wages across classifications however it chooses. The issue that you raise is a very important one, and I wouldn't have thought, not just from industry to industry, but even from classification to classification, I'm waiting to hear from people who've got much more experience in this area than I do about exactly that question. How sensitive are different wages in different classifications, in different industries, possibly even in different parts of the country, to the setting of minimum wages? As Tim rightly points out, that's the essence of the balancing. The sensitivity of employment decisions, the decision of the employer, as well as the decision of the potential employee. How sensitive is a person's decision to gain work when it's offered to the level of the minimum wage, as filtered by the tax and social security system? How sensitive is an employer's decision to take on a person at a minimum wage? And does that change as you go up the wage classifications? Does it change as you go from industry to industry? That's a very good question. I'm expecting to receive submissions on just those sorts of issues. There's really no other basis upon which we can divine the answer to that than undertaking the analysis and research and hearing from people who've got that experience.
Nick Demopoulos from CEDA. Ian, to what extent will you take into account external factors in setting the minimum wage? What I mean by external factors is the propensity in recent times of organisations to move labour force and their operations offshore due to competitive reasons.
Thanks, Nick. Well, the sharp-eyed among you would have seen the second of those factors which the Commission is obliged to consider in setting minimum wages as employment and competitiveness across the economy. And I think, Nick, that answers the question. Well, we are obliged to consider how the Australian minimum wage structure would influence the competitiveness of Australian labour and Australian industry, to some extent, feeding back through employment across the economy. That's the word. That's the wording of the Act. Now, of course, the instrument that we're setting is minimum wages. Again, I'd want it to be clear. Some people seem to have the view that the Fair Pay Commission is setting wages, full stop. No, no, it sets minimum wages. The market determines what the wage will be, except, of course, it can't go below the minimum. And certain parts of the market and certain classifications, I expect that what we would observe of wages is much more likely to be the result of market forces interacting than people actually being on the minimum. But we've yet to undertake research. In fact, the Award Simplification Task Force is undertaking research in that area, and I expect to get the results of that too. How many Australians whose working conditions are tied to awards are actually paid the award minimum? Now, depending upon the answer to that question and the sensitivities that Tim was referring to before, you know, moving the minimum wage may or may not have much impact on the average wage. In the end, one would think that the average wage has a lot to say about the competitiveness of Australian labour and the competitiveness of Australian income. Moving the minimum around might not affect that, Nick. It might have much more impact on the living standards of low-paid Australians. We're yet to see that. But it might not make much difference to overall competitiveness within limits. I just need to, you know, we need to get evidence, consult about that, and think about how that affects the decision as well.
Desmore, Ian, from the Institute for Private Enterprise. You talked about the balancing between the unemployed and the low paid, and in the course of referring to the low paid, you actually used the words especially the low paid. I would have thought that any commission that's looking at the minimum wage would look especially at the unemployed. And because there's an enormous difference, as you know, between the minimum wage and the top rate of unemployment benefit, namely about $12,000 or $13,000. So I'd just like to get your view on that, and in the course of it, maybe you could say something about what you think should be, who you think should be included as the unemployed, because we've got official unemployment rate, of course, but we have a lot of other people who are looking for work, who are not officially unemployed, who can't get work because of this terrible minimum wage problem.
Thanks, Des. In the first case, talking about especially the low paid there, I was emphasising especially the low paid, Des, because I figure that the low paid are most likely to be the ones who are actually on the minimum wage. Now, I don't know how far up that goes, how far up the actual wage adheres to the minimum, but I'd lay London to a brick, I think, that the low paid are definitely paid the award minimum. So when I say especially the low paid, I mean especially the low paid relative to the higher paid, where moving the minimum might not make much difference at all because the minimum doesn't bind. The minimum binds, I conjecture, in the case of the low paid, and that's why I would be interested in the minimum, especially for the low paid. In terms of the unemployed, look, I'm, you know, this commission is part of a broader piece of legislation, one aim of which I take, and this is just my interpretation, is to try to encourage as many Australians into the workforce as we can. And as Des rightly points out, in the case of the Fair Pay Commission, to be watchful over the extent to which minimum wages are an obstacle to Australians gaining paid employment. There are various reasons, social and economic, why it would be a very good thing for us to increase the employment rate here in Australia. I would not for a minute suggest that the only reason why people can't find work is the minimum wage. However, I think the minimum wage is a very important factor. And what the Commission's asked to do, amongst other things, is to determine how important a factor the minimum wage is to people getting work, whether they are on the official unemployment statistics or whether they're people, as Des says, who would like to be able to work more hours, longer hours or whatever if they had their druthers.
Professor Morris Sheehan, Pharmacy Guild of Australia. You mentioned that the first determination would be made probably around about spring, September through November. What is the review period then that you have in mind for reviewing those determinations? Is that something that you have fixed upon or discussed?
Sorry,
with your
Morris,
colleagues?
Reviewing the determinations? What,
well,
what
you
mean?
Set a determination in terms of the wage levels, the minimum levels, is that what you're proposing? And then would you review those? What factors then would cause you to then review those? And would it be on a 12-monthly basis?
Thanks, Morris. Look, the legislation says two things about that. Firstly, it says that we are to bring our first determination down no later than spring 2006. And then it says that the timing and the scope of further determinations are up to the Commission. So the Commission has the legal power to decide how often and when and to what extent it will review minimum wages going forward. I don't want to preempt a decision about that on the part of my commissioners, but can I say that the Commission, obviously, its main aim or game here is to ensure that minimum wages are not an obstacle to the unemployed getting work or putting low-paid workers out of work or ceasing to play its role as part of the safety net. That requires ongoing monitoring, in particular, to take into account the point that Nick raised about changing economic circumstances in which Australia finds itself. So, Morris, there is no timetable. The Commission, after having made its first determination, I mean, we may well decide that we are going to announce in advance what our timetable will be. I just don't know. I haven't raised that issue with my fellow commissioners yet. What I can tell you is the legislation gives us the freedom to set it when we want, but of course that freedom is constrained by the responsibility hanging over the Commission to make sure that it does its job. And that may require more frequent determinations or less frequent determinations depending upon the circumstances we find.
Ian, is it possible for the government to require you to make a review?
I don't believe so. The Australian Fair Pay Commission is independent of the government. I have to make an annual report to the Australian Parliament. The Director of the Secretariat must also submit an annual report, and of course the Director of the Secretariat, Jennifer, will appear before Senate estimates. So there are mechanisms whereby the Parliament can review what we're up to and of course debate the process and the results of what we're doing in the Parliament. Other than that, the way the legislation is set up, and as I understand it, the determinations of the Fair Pay Commission are not subject to appeal. Now, of course, there's nothing to stop anybody mounting a challenge to the constitutional authority of the Commission, or indeed to the natural justice associated with the way it goes about its business, and that would be a challenge that was raised with the High Court. But in the normal course of events, the Commission's determinations are not subject to legislative review, and I don't believe the government can direct the Commission to find anything in particular. It can make a submission, which I expect it will do, vigorously, but it can't direct us.
Ian, Philip Weikart, Productivity Commission. Ian, you mentioned that you have been instructed not to make a determination in nominal terms, which is lower than the last determination set by the Industrial Relations Commission. In future, is there any guidance that prevents you, let's say in 10 years hence, making a determination that was lower than the last determination? Is there a ratchet here or not?
No, Philip, not in the legislation. The only constraint is the one that I've mentioned, that the determinations cannot be below the level set by the Industrial Relations Commission last year in its safety net, so it can never go in nominal terms below the $12.75 an hour. Other than that, you know, whether minimum wages at individual classifications or whatever we decide to divide them up, rise or fall in real terms, or rise or fall as a portion of average weekly earnings over time, is open for the Commission to decide. Now, if I were to constrain that in any way now, right here in front of this audience, I would be making a mockery of the consultation process that we're about to go through. I genuinely have an open mind. I'm well aware that there are people who believe the Commission's task implicitly. In fact, I was told on one occasion that I had received secret instructions from the Prime Minister to do exactly this. I can assure you that that is absolutely false. But there is a view that the Commission's task is by hook or by crook to lower real wages. That is not what the legislation says. I make you this commitment, ladies and gentlemen. What you'll find of me in this role, whether you like it or whether you don't, is that I will follow my instructions from the Act. I will do what the Parliament has asked the Commission to do, not a jot more and not a jot less. And if I ever find myself in a position where I can't do that, you'll have my resignation. That is how I was trained when I worked in the public sector, and that's what I'll do. Now, you might not like the outcome of that. What I'll be asking you as the public to judge is whether you think the Commission has got this balance right. In moving minimum wages in real terms or as a proportion of average weekly earnings over time, you know, the litmus test will be how well the Commission has balanced minimum wages in those dual capacities as part of the safety net and as a cost of employing unemployed persons or keeping low-paid Australians in work. That's a very important balancing act. That's the essence of what we do. And the test of whether we do that correctly over time will be what our workforce looks like over the lengthier period of time. And for us to get more people into work, to ensure that the safety net plays the role that we as Australians want it to play, that's the key. And can I assure you that the decision is not being made by one economist, let alone two economists. There are five people who will make these decisions, and they'll be decisions which are informed, as I've described, by the widest consultation that I can undertake. The results of those consultations, certainly if people are happy to have their submissions made public, will be made public. So you'll be able to see what sort of advice comes forward to us, and then you'll be able to assess for yourselves whether you think these five people have got this answer right or wrong.
Thank you very much, Ian, for a great address. John Nevenhuizen from Monash University. Just a couple of questions, Ian. First of all, in your determination, do you need to have a unanimous verdict, or is it possible to have majority, minority? Secondly, do you make just one determination, or are there a set of determinations across a variety of fields of employment? And thirdly, when you make a determination, will you be able possibly to monitor the consequences of that determination in terms of the extent to which it creates a flow-on effect in relative margins across the labour market? Just those three.
Oh, thanks, John. sure, there isn't a fourth. They're good questions. Thank you, John. The legislation says that the Commission shall make its determinations, quote-unquote, as a body. And my fellow commissioners and I, as you can well imagine, discussed this matter at our first meeting, and we are of a mind that what the legislation means as a body means that there will be one determination. One determination. Now, what goes on inside the Commission, of course, is ultimately our business, and we will abide by Cabinet solidarity. What I expect will happen is that there will be very vigorous discussion and debate around my Commission table, and having met, I've only met two of my four fellow commissioners I met for the very first time on the 30th of March, and getting to know those two gentlemen and the others whom I did know a bit better, I think I can guarantee you that there will be some very vigorous debate around the table, and that's a good thing. That ought to be a matter of assurance. But I think I can also assure, I know I can assure you that those same five people are committed to the legislation, which says that we produce our determinations as a body. So there won't be any minority decision, and there won't be any discussion outside the commission as to who said what and how we arrived at our view. One or more determinations, I think I picked up that question, or that with Morris's question. Yes, John, we make determinations across the pattern of minimum wages. At the moment, there are 40,000 classifications. I expect that number will come down as a result of Matthew O'Callaghan's work, but it will still be a large number. And lest you think this sounds like an Everest-like task, can I point out that that's what the Industrial Relations Commission has been doing, you know, for a long time. There are large numbers of classification wages, and the Industrial Relations Commission has made decisions, sometimes giving the same amount, dollar-wise, to all the classifications, sometimes discriminating. It has the right to do that. It's not an impossible task. On the contrary, the Fair Pay Commission will take that on in a somewhat simplified form. But it will certainly be differentiated, I imagine, or at least award by award or whatever classifications that the O'Callaghan Task Force comes up with. And finally, the monitoring one. I think the monitoring one is very important. Again, the legislation specifies that the Commission can monitor the results of its determinations. Are we doing that all right? The legislation gives us the right to do it. Well, we'll certainly be doing that. In many areas here, ladies and gentlemen, as I've emphasised before, there is no cut-and-dried answer. There is some science, but it's not definitive science. And in any case, this is not an issue which is to be decided purely and simply by science. As I said earlier on, this is about people's lives, and I'm well aware of that. I'm not about simply to apply a formula. There will be issues about which people differ greatly, and some of those issues will be amenable to the decision by evidence. So it will be the case that we'll have to agree to disagree, if not within the Commission, then between the Commission and others of those who comment on its determinations. And I'll be very keen to see, okay, well, let's see how the evidence pans out. And I can give you this assurance that if the evidence starts to mount in a way which suggests that the Commission was mistaken in the way that it reached its determination, then I'll be very keen to change my mind and to make a determination based upon the best available evidence that we can have. This Commission, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't just exist for a year and then go away. This Commission, and obviously I'm presuming that a change of government wouldn't see it off, which it may well do, at least between now and the next change of government, this Commission will have a task to perform. If the Commission were to continue on beyond the change of government, if there is one to happen, then, you know, my expectation is that the task that it has of setting minimum wages will continue on into the future. And therefore, it's important for the Commission to build up expertise and knowledge about the phenomena which it's examining so that we can try to guarantee that as time goes by, we make better quality decisions about these important issues as the evidence accumulates. There, I think, the British Low Pay Commission is another very fine example. I'm travelling to Britain, half on university business and half on Fair Pay Commission business in a fortnight's time, and one of the things I'll be doing on Commission business is meeting with the Low Pay Commission, with the Chair and the members of the Commission and the staff, so that I can familiarise myself to a greater extent with how they went about their consultation process and, of course, how they judged, in the British case, these sensitivities that Tim raised earlier on. How sensitive, in the British case, employment is to movements in the minimum wage and what their experience has been. And I'd also be very keen to learn from the British Low Pay Commission how they have accumulated this expertise over time, how they have learnt, given that they've been doing this job now for something like 7 or 8 years in the British case. Yes.
Yeah, apropos some of the comments and questions, the term working poor is increasingly entering the public domain with all its implications and assumptions.
Indeed.
Now, the market is one of the important indicators of your work. What other specific indicators would you be considering as a balance to the market? I mean, what is a poverty line? What can a person, how can a person live on a particular minimum wage?
Fine. Thank you. When you say the market, I'm assuming you mean the wage that's set by the market. Yeah, right, okay. Now, in terms of the role of a minimum wage as part of the safety net, I mean, I'm expecting to have submissions not least from the trade union movement, but also from community organisations of various forms, and I imagine also the churches, who will bring to the Commission's attention evidence on precisely those points. So, yes, indeed, the Commission must inform itself about the role the minimum wage plays as part of the safety net for low-paid Australians. Now, the safety net for low-paid Australians is about, it is about trying to ensure a certain minimum standard of living. Precisely how that's defined, what role the minimum wage plays, are matters which I'm yet to be informed about. I don't bring any specific expertise there at all. I imagine that my colleague on the Commission, Patrick McClure, is steeped in this, but I'm certainly not. However, let me say this. I think it's important, ladies and gentlemen, for us to remember that the Fair Pay Commission is about setting and adjusting minimum wages. And that's a very important thing to be done. But that's it. It has one instrument. The Fair Pay Commission has not been charged with solving poverty. It only has one instrument anyway, and I'm sure you would accept my assertion that the problem of poverty is far more complex than just the setting of the minimum wage. The minimum wage is an important component in the incidence of poverty. That's why the legislation charges us with considering the role of the minimum wage as part of the safety net. But I believe I'd be naive in the extreme if I were to argue that all there was to poverty was setting the minimum wage and we could remove it overnight by, I mean, would that we could. Neither is the Commission charged with solving all of the unemployment problems that we have here in Australia. The Commission has one instrument, the minimum wage. Is the minimum wage an important part of the unemployment outcome in Australia, certainly in parts of the labour market? Well, I suspect the answer to that is clearly yes. Well, how sensitive, how important is that role? Des has got a strong view. Tim would have an equally strong view, I expect, in the other direction. I don't know yet. I don't know. I'm expecting people to bring evidence to us precisely on that question. I'm commissioning evidence precisely on that question because that goes to the very heart of the balancing act which the Commission has been charged to undertake.